Blog Talk Radio.
I am living on channel.
it did start up. Hello, Blog Talk Radio. This is Here Be Monsters on a Sunday. And I have a little ditty to play for you to bring us on in. Today we have a special show. We're not going to be too political, but then again, maybe so. P.E. Nolan is going to be with us to read her piece, some of her creative writing, which is absolutely wonderful, a story she is chronicling. And I am going to get her on air with us, and while I do, let me play you a little ditty that kind of goes to today's theme.
No, I'm here.
I hear you, yeah. As if everybody helps over the music.
One's in the middle unmoved. Waiting to show what he sees to the other two, to the one attacking, so afraid, and the one that keeps trying to love and trust and getting himself betrayed. In the plan, ooh, the divine plan. One so sweet, so overly loving and gentle. He lets people into his innermost sacred temple. Blind faith to care, blind rage to kill. Why'd he let him talk him down to cheap work and cheap thrills? In the plan, ooh, the insulting plan, God must be a boogeyman.
Mitchell. Hey there, Trisha, you with me?
I am.
Hey, how's your Sunday going so far?
Really mellow. So it was a great music choice. I enjoyed it.
I'm glad you did. I thought it brought to bear. For any of you just joining us, like David, I see David has just walked through the door. We are on specially today to take out to take your story out for a run, right?
Yes, it's a dress rehearsal for sort of.
There you go.
It's I'm reading this story a little shorter because it has to be like 8 minutes, so a shortened version of this text at a program next Friday night at 7 o'clock called Bad Date Great Story. They have a site that's their name, Bad Date Great Story.
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah. Going to type it in, Bad Date Great Story. They're on Twitter, too, with like an 8 in the great. But anyhow, that's next week. And I wanted to, anyway, I'm really delighted to be able to be share it with you guys tonight for a run-through. And that's what this is. This is the run.
Yeah, there you go. Leading up, this is actually sort of, not sort of, but it's autobiographical. Yeah?
Oh, well, they call it creative nonfiction, I believe is the genre, because it's what my parents used to accuse me of telling stories as a kid was a selective presentation, of deliberately creating an impression with selected presentation of facts. And so,
okay.
So it's something, it's, you know, there's more to it than this, and I think that, you know, certainly the other person in the story would have his own opinion, and I'm glad I'm friendly with an entertainment lawyer now. If that did happen, I was thankful for that. I was thinking, I'm sure I'm glad I'm friends with an entertainment lawyer in case somebody finally gets mad at me one day. But anyway, yes, there's an autobiographical element.
Okay. Well, and Krell has kindly put a link to the complete text of this as it's posted over at roundtree7.com on the blog today. So anytime that you're comfortable, if you do you need a lead up on this
we
can dive right in, can't we?
This is called The Preacher and the Pagan by P.E. Nolan, and that's me. I have great respect for Christianity as a concept. I just think most Christians should take a lesson from the Quakers and shut the hell up. They might learn something. It would be nice, though, if churches actually worked for social justice, sustainability, and peace, which is what I was hoping when I met H.D. Smitty. H.D. Smitty was the pastor of a small suburban church in Colorado. The membership of his church had declined so steadily that they were fixing to say one last benediction and sell the building to a bunch of Latino Pentecostals. H.D. Smitty and I both went to college in Austin, Texas, but we didn't know each other. Like many modern romances, this relationship began on the Internet, but not because of computer dating. It all started on account of my blog, Menopausal Stoners. The preacher stumbled over a couple of years ago when I was fantasizing about the Menopausal Stoner Militia, a group of generally older women with shotguns and weed, prepared to return fire if any teabagger started shooting. J.H.D. Smitty offered his services as shooting instructor and chaplain in the comments. I followed a link to his blog where H.D. Smitty was carrying on about the neighboring church singing onboard Christian soldiers in support of the troops without the faintest idea it was the theme song of the Salvation Army and appeared to advocate killing infidels. I commented, "Dude, surely you must have noticed that Christians are notoriously obtuse about the inherent contradiction in their position. He wrote that one of his great disappointments as a preacher is that bright, energetic people like me, who were committed to making the world a better place, won't come to church because of all the assholes. Then he started leaving more and more comments at my blog, and we became cordial. When he offered to teach me to shoot again, I figured that a preacher with a shotgun would come in handy if the world got so fucked up we needed to get off the grid. He could shout scripture at the teabaggers while he reloaded. One afternoon in February, he sent me a personal email. It was a pleasant little missive wherein he described some of the questions he was pondering about his own self, like changing his career and moving back to Austin. I wasn't sure what the preacher wanted from me and needed clarification in order to respond. I replied with a simple question, "So, are you married?" He wrote back that he was separated, which was all the clarification I needed to know that the preacher was looking to get laid. Since I'm always happy to explore the idea of getting laid, I sent him my phone number. As it happened, though, he was more interested in talking about theology, comparative mythology, and the power of story. I knew plenty of Bible stories from Vacation Bible School, but H.D. Smitty particularly enjoyed telling me all about the Bible once he heard I refused to read it. I should have been more concerned about his lack of flirting, but I was having too much fun influencing the sermons going out from a Midwestern pulpit on Sunday mornings. We quickly fell into a habit of talking on the phone Thursday nights, sorting out the message for his Sunday services. Since it was Lent, our conversations focused on stories leading up to Holy Week, most specifically about the time Mary Magdalene anointed Jesus' feet. I explained that from a pagan perspective, Mary was nurturing and restoring his spirit. Somebody had to, since all his disciples kept getting drunk and passing out. Even if Mary Magdalene had fucked him blind, calling her a prostitute was a patriarchal imposition, kind of like calling Smurfette a hoe. The preacher was stimulated by this discussion. He asked me to watch a movie called The Last Temptations of Christ and to tell him what I thought. After I got it from Netflix, I told him I thought it was bullshit and that Jesus reminded me so much of Peter Sellers in the ruling class that I couldn't separate the two. I made him watch Crimes of Passion with Kathleen Turner as the hooker, China Blue, and Anthony Perkins as the crazy preacher who tried to kill her with a gleaming razor dildo. The next thing you know, H.D. Smitty wanted to buy a plane ticket to New York with the extra money he made from conducting a funeral from some old guy in the Bible study group. I tried to discourage the idea, even as I assured him he was welcome. He said that he had only known one other woman in his whole life who made him feel like springtime, and he wasn't going to let this one slip away. I smelled a midlife crisis, but was flattered nevertheless. He scheduled himself to arrive a few days after he delivered the final sermon in his dying church, and I got used to the idea that a preacher was coming down from the mountains just to meet me. He made sure I understood that as soon as a few financial questions were settled, he intended to file his divorce papers, but he called me so frequently that I got nervous. All the random phone calls looked like he was trying to fill the empty space in his life since he left his wife. Things got worse once I saw a few photos. There was no denying that the man was a pudgy hayseed. I felt guilty for being a snobby New Yorker and told myself that even if H.D. Smitty had spent his adult life playing Little House on the Prairie in tiny Nebraskan farm towns, he'd been intimately involved with the human heart, which is the same all over the world. I told myself that a person's quirks could become endearing, and I took the precaution of reminding the preacher that he would be sleeping in my son's room. A few weeks later, I met him at the airport. From a distance, he didn't look too bad. He had a big belly and a non-existent old man's butt, so his body looked like a lemon on toothpicks. But I was prepared to like the man, and my own stretch marks jelly belly was never far from my mind. we went out to my favorite neighborhood restaurant for dinner, and after a bottle of Italian Red, I figured I could get used to one of his eyes being way bigger than the other. But by midnight, I knew for sure there was no way I could get used to having sex with him. Never one to waste time, I took him straight to bed when we got back to my place. I'm sad to say that his half-mast hard-on drizzled jizz down my leg in under 4 minutes. I understand that 53-year-old erections can be erratic, but when that happens, a man needs to know what to do with his hands and mouth. I knew more about mouths than H.D. Smitty when I was in sixth grade, and me and my best girlfriend sucked each other's little titties in a tent made out of a bed sheet in the backyard. He sighed and said, "You're very different from my wife. She was never into it." I nodded and tried to look wise when I sent him off to sleep in the other room. If that was all she ever got, I was surprised she hadn't been depressed to that point of suicide. And I say that with all the authority of someone who's been institutionalized for suicidal depression. The next morning, I told him I wasn't ready to have sex again. He quietly agreed to keep his distance. We went sightseeing all afternoon, and after a modest dinner at Patsy's Pizza, instead of going to the bathroom when the bill came, like I usually do when I'm out with a man who wants in my pants, I paid well over half the bill. Generally, my out-of-town friends pick up the tab a few times when they're staying in my apartment, where I make sure there are endless amounts of weed, beer, and tasty snacks. But when H.D. Smitty saw 40 green floating American dollars, he said, "Hey, thanks," and stuck it in his pocket. I took the next day off from work because he wanted to see some monastery up near Bear Mountain and an estate in Sleepy Hollow. We walked around the grounds, appreciating the fresh green landscape and the sweeping view of the Hudson. He declared I had magical powers, that in 5 years in seminary and a decade of watching people doze off during sermons had not prepared him for the ego hit he had taken in a few days with me. He was so pitiful that I gave him another chance at bedtime. As I situated my naked self on the bed, he quickly stripped and proceeded to crawl between my open knees. He paused briefly and looked at my pussy like it was like a big hapless mutt who didn't know he was allowed to go there, took a deep breath, and started lapping. I made him stop. I couldn't tolerate it. He pulled himself up on the pillows beside me, looked perplexed, and asked, "Did you want me to stop because it was so bad?" I thought a moment and then lightly built his nipple. "Anybody ever do that before?" I asked. Nobody had, so I showed him what else I could do. Apparently, he's never had a real blowjob either. A couple of minutes later, he rolled over onto his back and exclaimed, "That was great." I patted his hand and gently suggested he might put down the Bible sometime to read The Joy of Sex and send him to the other room. The next morning, as a yellow taxi went off to the airport, I was grateful to see the last of H.D. Smitty. He may have thought it was wrong to insist on a literal interpretation of the Bible, but that man was a Bible thumper through and through. He fully believed all anyone ever needed to know about life, the universe, and everything was in the Bible, just like he thought his dick was the sexual alpha and omega. He was a living, breathing, patriarchal imposition who couldn't imagine any point of view other than his own. It never entered H.D. Smitty's head that some people might have a problem with him smoking weed and shacking up while he was still married. He's not the first person to start dating before a divorce is final, but most folks aren't unemployed preachers looking for a job delivering sermons as if they have some sort of moral authority. The worst part was that he was so comfortable with his behavior that he cheerfully posted about his vacation in New York on his own blog with the full knowledge that his preacher buddies read menopausal stoners. One of them could easily tell the bishop all about H.D. Smitty smoking weed and chasing pussy in New York City. Maybe he thought that a wild time with that pagan divorcee would make him look like a heterosexual stud instead of a saggy-ass, cockeyed old man whose overbite made him kiss like a chicken. About a week after he got back to Colorado, he called to tell me about a new job in Wyoming. He was dead serious when he said he could ride into that church like a Texas Ranger and bring the congregation back to life, except that instead of a horse, he'd be riding his Kawasaki. I never talked to him again. Maybe we are headed toward Armageddon. Every branch of our government is owned by corporations who have been declared human by the Supreme Court. They can put thousands of people out of work, foreclose on their homes, poison the Gulf, and frack up the water supply so bad you can set tap water on fire while they give untold amounts of money to delusional fat-ass crackers like Newt Gingrich and that crazy Rick Santorum who brought home a miscarried fetus in a pickle jar so baby brother could have dinner with the family. The president holds his Nobel Peace Prize in one hand and fires drones at little Pakistani kids with the other. Adoring fans still believe Obama will hold Wall Street accountable even though he surrounded himself with bankers. 50 million Americans are without health care, but private doctors are still looking for a heart that will work inside Dick Cheney. It may well be time to get off the grid, but there's no reason to have a preacher around, whether he can shoot or not. The end.
Applause, applause. That was great.
That was almost 10 minutes. I think I started at 12, so I might have brought it in under 10 minutes. That's what my task
is. I think that you did, and you did a really good job. I think people are going to enjoy hearing that one.
Thank you. I want to up on the chat room now. Smurfette. Smurfette really gets a bad rap if you ask me.
Do you think?
I think that, you know, a lot of people think Smurfette is a hoe because she's the only girl. And, you know, I never really knew much about it until I got in a big fight about this with my child.
Really?
Yeah, he was like a senior in high school and was saying some bullshit, I can't remember about what, but somehow we got on to, and he called Smurfette a hoe, and I had to hit him on the head with an empty seltzer bottle. And so after that, I researched more about Smurfette. And really, there's questions about the behavior and her creation and all this stuff, which I guess is not dissimilar to life if you have God as a grandpa in the sky, like Papa Smurf, sort of. But anyhow,
speaking as a gal who was often part of a crowd of just the guys, you can get called that, but it isn't usual in my experience, you know.
No.
Maybe because my looks are goddamn naive.
But I think that preachers do. I think a lot of Christians feel compelled to make Mary Magdalene into a prostitute. Even if she was just like a widow or something, they need to have her be this so that and that being a prostitute is bad. Like there's something wrong with it to begin with.
That's true. In that day and age, there were many goddess temples still in the area, in the neighborhood, dedicated to the sacred whore, you know. So it isn't unusual that Mary Magdalene would be cast in that version. But, you know, my cousin Jerry is a Jesuit, and he'll argue back with me that, you know, she wasn't a groupie, but she was Jesus's wife.
Well, I think that's, I don't know, you know, what do I know? It's you know.
Well, a good Jewish boy would, you know, the first miracle was at a wedding that his mother was officiating at. Don't call this a wedding, really. time.
No, I think I remember all this stuff. It's just that, you know, I really, what can I say? I don't pay that much attention to Bible stories. I mean, I like stuff, but really, I mean, I think
I hear you.
This preacher's credit. I mean, that's one of the reasons we started really talking is that in his church, he was a Lutheran, and at his seminary, and I guess Lutherans mostly believe that the Bible, particularly the Old Testament or the Torah, is a patchwork of folk tales to describe, you know, to give how to live, just, you know, anecdotes.
Parables,
Yeah, you know, and so they look at it like that, and so that's why I kind of got involved with him, or where we, you know, got interested in to begin with, you know, was over that, and how you can use those stories to really learn something, and why the Bible.
Oh, you can. Yes.
A lot of. You're right.
Hello?
Hello.
Gotcha.
Are you there?
I'm here. Yeah. Can
okay.
you hear me?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
I can tell. I'm on the speakerphone, so.
Oh, that's okay. It's working very well. It's me who has the what do you call it problem. Now tell us again where you're going to be giving this recitation.
Oh, at Bad Date Great Story down in Solas. It's a bar, Solas, in the East Village. It's on East 9th Street, not far from KGB, where I usually read. And I've never been to this one, though. And anyhow, it's on East 9th Street. And it's $5 to get in, but I guess the drinks are cheap or something. And anyway.
Well, there you go.
You know, yeah, you know, anyway, it should be a fun time. I like, you know, I guess what I try to do, I think that you do, what I'm getting at is preachers and politics and religion and how the personal becomes the political in a real way, I think, when we talk about our personal stories and how we live our values. And so that's
yeah,
one of the things.
Yeah, I'd agree with you there.
You know, that's one of the things I like to do with stories. And I noticed Osho does that a lot at Roundtree, too, in his stories. He brings certain things to life.
The value and the moral. Of what so many people leave out now and don't account for in how there's the moral, what he's doing is questioning the moral value of our society, because our society is a direct reflection of what our leadership and our politics are. It's all about politics. I've read that so many times lately, posted everywhere. It's all about politics. And, you know, when you get down to it, it is about politics, because isn't politics just exactly, doesn't it just exactly reflect our personal politics, our personal values, what we hold sacred and dear?
Absolutely, and that's why, you know, I just get so, I mean, like Obama does have a Nobel Peace Prize, and he does shoot drones at little kids, you know, I think
he does.
So. You know, I think that's an alcoholic thing to do, and I think that it behooves us at this point to just say it, you know, just say
have
it.
Have the conversation,
You know, just like, it's like, I don't want to be political all the time, I got other things to do, but yet, the things I do are reflective of my values, like the choice in my career is you know, I'm a teacher because that's what I value.
Yeah.
You know, you do what you do because that's what, you know, the things we do are express our values. And I don't see how
people can,
you know, anyhow, so it's all political. And that's why this thing with the Super Bowl today and that right to work law in Indiana this week, I think was, you know, just, a nice little one of society's little ironies that, you know, there are all these rich people dropping mustard all over a stadium that was built by union workers, and there's very low-paid staff going in to wipe the clean up after these rich people, but meanwhile they're just spending a fucking fortune on advertising and this whole thing, and it's all about, you know, making money.
Somebody gave me a good talking to, as they would say. First of all, it's a tradition in this country. It has become one in the last 40 years. And how many people are put to work because of this exciting, you know, game and sport that's going to go on? And how many people across the country are going to be put to work, you know? And so, well, are you talking about the bookies? No. It extends from the public relations to it to airline, you know, travel agents, la, 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 on down. It's a whole cascade of different people with different professions who will benefit from this. And, yeah, I see the value of it and the purpose of it, but the morals of it. What about the morals of it, as you say? But, you know,
Patriot. You know Punk Patriot. We love Patriot. You know?
You're for the Patriot?
What I'm saying is Punk Patriot made a really valid point in one of his videos a while back about how capitalism and stuff like that is great. And I'm not saying the Super Bowl is not fun and shouldn't happen. What I am saying is much the same as I'm not saying that corporate CEOs shouldn't get a bonus either. But Punk points out that if they can give themselves a 20% bonus, then everybody who works for that company needs to get the 20% bonus. Not
great.
It's the bonus, and your job just gets shipped overseas. And
agreed.
That's what happens. So, yeah, okay, great. I'm glad there's a few extra flights. I'm glad there's guys working. I'm glad for all of that. But I just think they should all make a living wage. And when Indiana, as so many other states, has gone in and passed another law saying your job is absolutely not secure, we can fire you at will, and bloody, bloody,
right.
Bloody,
yeah, I hear you.
You know, and so, you know, I think that occupying the Super Bowl would have been a hell of a thing to pull off, but I can't imagine.
I'm surprised. I saw a little bit over on your side. I'm surprised that this wasn't attempted by the Occupy group.
You know, Ruth, if I were them, I would leave it alone. Good fucking goddamn. The people in this country are so dumb, most of them. That they would do is say some bullshit about how fucked up Occupy Wall Street is. And because of the reasons you just mentioned, all the people that are getting jobs, the PR.
No, it's about the tradition of the sports event and the teams that are playing. I guarantee you that's where that's coming from.
Mainstream media would have had a field day crucifying Occupy for it. And the unions I'm watching the ball game mostly. What the hell, you know? It's. But also, I think it's more of a union issue. And one of the things Occupy has been able to do is help mobilize the union, as we see out in Oakland. And that's really, you know, where all that kind of stuff is going. I would be afraid for occupiers outside the Super Bowl, the way we have a paramilitary police force now.
They've jumped. I think that NDAA and, you know, I used to be a time I was really very naive about anything like this. I might have had all my studying and research done about some terrorist organization and, you know, the Red Japanese Army or something, but I always, you know, sort of trusted my government to give me a truth as best they could without jeopardizing the security of the country. I have long gone away, walked away from that stupidity. But you know what? I have to say, I don't think that the majority of American people are stupid. I think they've been purposely dumbed down on one side. And on the other side, the folks who, you know, certainly have the abundance of intelligence required to understand the different bullshit actions that are going on by our government right under their noses in corporate collusion. Tricia, these folks don't have the time. They don't have the time to sit down and do the work we do, searching it out.
You know, I think a lot of people really, there used to be a statistic or talked about a statistic where it was like a million people a night were looking at Rachel Maddow and 3 million were looking at Glenn Beck, which says to me, where's the other 8 million people? Well, they're either, you know, at working two jobs and passing out, you know, taking care of their kids. They're isolated in their homes in a situation we find ourselves in now. Looking at wrestling or NASCAR or whatever their guilty pleasure is, and there's nothing wrong with that. They're relaxing in their own house.
They deserve it.
I think that one thing that has happened through the public education system, in particular, over these same 30-some-odd years since Ronald Reagan took over and went back to basics, is that there has been a concerted and just relentless effort to standardize testing as a high-stakes measurement for intelligence and success in school. And the way these tests are implemented throughout curriculum causes separation of topics so that people don't make connections. Critical thinking has been essentially dismantled by the way these tests work. Now, what I believe is that a lot of people slipped through this system, so you see them down at Occupy Wall Street. I think that my example of this is Lee Camp. Lee Camp's a comedian, and he's just this age group where it's like he would have slipped through all of this propaganda and education and the whole way that, you know, people like the Koch brothers and the John Birch Society and Phyllis Schlafly and all those people for all these years have been making a concerted effort to, as you say, dumb down the country through education, propaganda, and I believe the church is also of these arms to maintain the status quo. What I saw very clearly with this preacher was the relationship between the collection plate and his paycheck. So the way that the whole church system is set up, a local preacher is not going to be going in to really challenge people in the congregation outside of their comfort zone and still get a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And so the church, even in just little local pockets, often is, letting the status quo be maintained, kind of like I always look at it, sort of like the hobbits in Hobbiton in The Lord of the Rings. You know, there's all this shit going on in the world, but we're going to keep our little local happy pastoral lifestyle. And so they help maintain that.
I hear you.
Yeah. So,
well, the year I really do think that certain things like NDAA and whatnot have been passed, so that this election year, if Occupy gets too out of pocket, you know, which they have been already, Homeland Security has created a whole network of how to get to the metropolitan police departments, and you know they've issued them even new equipment to get rid and break apart and to, you know, strategize how to keep Occupy from achieving any kind of notability or any kind of media. What do they call that media? I want to say eyeball, media, not attention. They call it media exposure, sorry.
Well, I think the call is now, Washington, D.C., May 30. Everybody's getting back together. So, you know,
D.C. Got thrown out of McPherson Park on Friday.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw something over on Dennis Traynor's site that both of them, it wasn't just, I was thinking it was just McPherson Park. I didn't realize they'd been to that Freedom Plaza also.
They did. I thought Freedom Park was being pretty much left alone. I was working on Friday, and I kept checking on Twitter, and I guess I didn't see the tweets that I needed to see.
It may be that people left from McPherson Square and went over to Freedom Plaza, and, you know, they were a little more... my general impression was that at McPherson Square they were a little more younger and lively as a group than the Freedom Plaza. You know, there were some slight differences between the two camps, but
one was October 2011 originally.
Freedom Plaza was October 2011.
Yeah, right.
Nothing, I just put in a cough drop. Keep talking.
Keep talking. That was the one thing you could say that was, I would like to remind
folks. You were talking about Freedom Plaza. We were talking about Freedom Plaza and Occupy 2011.
Both of them have been shut down now, yes?
Well, you know, I don't know. All I know is that everybody says, and it's true, you can't evict an idea. And whatever happened this weekend will be back on March 30th. And, you know, like Crow was pointing out with the swarm, and, you know, I think winter has been... slowish on the Occupy front, but I think it's given a lot of local things time to manifest and grow. And it's all good. I'm looking forward to the springtime. And sorry.
Well, May Day is going to be a big
one. Yes. May Day is going to be huge. And I'm sorry there's a paramilitary police force trying to put us all in, you know, detention camps in the desert, and where I guess Halliburton will make money off that, our own incarceration.
Oh, yeah. Good point. They're skimming the coastlines on the Gulf Basin here. There have been a lot of meetings and fundraisers for the people suffering from the poisoning, the Corexit poisoning and crude poisoning from the Gulf. And there's been some sweeps of those, and people have been jailed and taken aside and threatened. And, the government's got something going on where they're going to keep you from, by gosh, opening your mouth as they can. At least that's the direction. Didn't they learn from history, Tricia?
No.
From history.
We repeat. I think it's like a giant Mandelbrot set. I really do. The way that it just like goes out as far as it goes in one direction and in as far as it can in one direction. You know, it's just like endlessly pattern and fractals in
the inevitable atrophy. I hear you.
You know, just like, I mean, that's where I always get. With that stuff, because we do repeat. I mean, if you look on, 1890s and Robert Barons and the union struggles back in those days, and, the United States government sent surplus bombers to, blow up union workers, miners in Blair Mountain or wherever it was. It was some bullshit. And when you think of it, it's like Newt Gingrich just standing there. He reminds me of some like ignorant small planter in Alabama or Georgia back in the day, before the Civil War, just standing there saying, get those kids to work. I can't, you know.
I agree. I agree with you, and on the other hand, I've been listening very closely to the Ken doll, Romney, and what he's been having to say. And the fellow is an elitist, of course, but he's also, and it really pisses you off that someone with the kind of drop the moment kind of mentality would consider themselves an elitist, but it you know, that's just all jumbled up there. But the guy is a corporate raider. He's got an idea to get himself what some of what Cheney got his hands on. Lots and lots and lots of deals to be made from the Oval Office, you know. That's the way I see Mitt Romney, down to the bone, you know, the psychic sensibility. I see him as someone who is just waiting, itching, salivating to get his ass into the Oval Office so he can do, you know, the turns that, let's face it, Cheney wasn't it so much for power. The power he wanted was the money, and that's what he got.
Yeah, he got plenty, too. Like he needed any. Jesus.
Well,
God.
How much is enough? That's the old question of how much is enough, you know?
For those guys, but I'm glad it's enough for us. You know, I don't have what I have. I really, you know, it's a beautiful Sunday, and it's a, you know, it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. So, and
I hear you. There's gratitude to be found every day when you're getting up. There's so many folks who require assistance right now who aren't finding it. You know.
I know.
So you're quite right. On that one?
What?
On that one?
Yeah. It's anyway, that's about it. So what else are you going to do on this show today besides talk with
Well,
me?
I only came on so that we could do the test run for the Preacher and the Pagan. We did a good job. I think you did a good job. I think it'll go very well for you. It's going to be fun.
Well, do we have to come on for a whole hour? Or can
no, actually, we don't. I'm getting ready to wind us down. I have some poppers to put into the oven, and then I have to take them to my sister's across the street.
I really appreciate the opportunity. It's just I'm so psyched I'm running out of energy. But you were talking, I had a question. You were talking about what was going on down in the Gulf and people getting arrested for bringing attention to all the toxins and the poisoning and the children's health and things. And I was wondering how is Cherie? Don't you have a friend, Cherie, who's involved in that?
Yeah, Ms. Cherie Foytlin, she is nonstop. She is constant. She's the mom of like six kids. She's a young lady. She's in her 30s, and she's out there ramming and jamming. You can find her postings on the social networks from Twitter to Facebook, and she's attending all kinds of meetings that is raising the awareness and consciousness of folks to let them know where they can turn the resources that they do have to try and get some kind of recompense and to keep the ball rolling in the direction of getting these Feinberg down there and the rest of them to bring the pressure to bear through the politicians. And, you just want to laugh and cry at the same time on that one, and to bring the pressure to bear on BP, who said, and the President of the United States who walked out and said, well, I got this many billion out of BP. Well, where the fuck is it, buddy boy? The people of this area of the country are suffering culture assassination because of everybody. We're losing all of the industry that has been absolutely demolished. Oh, don't get me going. Yeah.
Well, that's a
nasty bath. But Cherie is on the road. You asked about Cherie. She is on the road, and she is tactfully and diplomatically calling for action on any front she can get it. And she's one of the people who's been actually followed by, it's either FBI, I think it is FBI, and she's been pulled over and asked about where her destinations are, and she's required them to show her identification, whereby they just break off and let her go on her way, but they're always around. Now, that's fucking scary.
Did she get thrown in jail for using the bathroom in the BP building some months ago?
Yeah.
Okay.
She's been arrested in front of the White House for the tar sands. She's Emma Goldberg. My God, that's who her guide is.
She's just like one of my heroes. I think she's so great, and I know you're in touch with her and have her on the show every now and then.
I think that I agree with you 100%. She is one of the people that I put so much respect and energy towards, because the job she has created for herself as spokeswoman for those who aren't being heard in this basin, with all of the unwell people, all the sick people, all of the unaccounted for funding too that was supposed to come to people to help them begin to repair and try and make something happen to save themselves, Tricia, themselves. There's they're looking at a lot of the smart heads that are down there in these industries that are no more, are saying, well, look, we found this biodiversity product that we might want to try to use on our dead ecosystem to reboot it, you know? And it costs lots of money, but that's what Mr. BP or Mr. Obama promised BP was going to pay for, all of that stuff. And, of course, they're not paying jack shit. They aren't about to pay jack shit. They'd rather diddle in a Supreme Court room arguing the matter and saying that they had. They put lies on MSNBC and NBC and ABC, and people are forced in this basin to watch these lies play out about how BP has made it whole and everything is warm and fuzzy and healthy. And we're walking through, you know, you can start to smell petroleum and other strange stuff in the swamps in the mid-northern part of our state. And that's where our aquifers are, right below those swamps. So where do you think that's coming from?
I just think, you know, and that's what, you know, what I really appreciated about this winter, you know, because Occupy, Zuccotti Park got smashed before Thanksgiving, and it was sad. The thing that was weird is I had been there just the day before. I didn't go down there much, but I had taken a friend down to show her. And the library was so beautiful, and it looked so good in Zuccotti Park. And the next day, they just craned it. And, you know, I knew Bloomberg.
Well, you know.
Was more...
Yeah.
Huh?
I'm sorry.
But the good thing about the winter is that, you know, people came back for New Year's. People stayed in touch. People are looking forward to the spring again and with new energy.
That is what's going on. There's nothing that's become ghosted about Occupy at all. If they were paying attention to all of the action days that go on every week.
Oh, yeah. There's been plenty of things, you know, having to just, like, keep everybody energized. And anyway, I'm excited, and I want to thank you for, you know, giving me this time today to kind of turn my political brain back on. I've been very introspective.
Hey, well, Thank you. Thank you for stepping in. I want to remind everybody who is listening and who listens in the archives, I hope you do, because we're going to be posting this. It was a wonderful rendition of The Preacher and the Pagan by P.E. Nolan. You're listening to Here Be Monsters. We're one of the drumline of indie radio shows that are boycotting the lies of the MSM, and we're providing people with an alternative media choice by speaking truth to power. We broadcast in solidarity with the peacefully driven Occupy movement worldwide, and this is what we call our Sunday show. It's sponsored by Roundtree 7 and Daughters of ISIS. Patronize us on both ends, please. Are you still with me, Tricia?
Yeah.
Well, I say good night.
It's not on the computer, just on the phone. Be what?
I want to say good night.
Okay, I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks. Okay,
goodbye.
Thanks for being with us. Okay, I gave you dead air, didn't mean to. And that's our show for this evening. I want to thank P.E. Nolan, or Tricia Poole, as she's better known as, or maybe she's better known as P.E. Nolan. I don't know. Either way, she's a talented lady. Janelle, you're getting here just in time for the sign-off. I hope everybody enjoys the rest of the evening. Whether or not you're going to watch football, please remember tonight, if you are enjoying the game to the fullest, that you can, Janelle, you can actually listen to it in archive. It's really a wonderful reading of P. Nolan's The Preacher and the Pagan. Tonight, be sure, remember, to call a cab. Don't drink and drive, okay? And that's it for Here Be Monsters this Sunday. We'll be back with the Sunday show and Jack Jodell next Sunday. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you, Janelle. Thank you, Crow. And thank you, Tricia. That's going to be a wrap.